Or let's bring in Mark Adelman. He's a law professor at the Zicklin School of Business, Baruch College, City University of New York. Mark, thanks so much for joining us. Now, from a distance, I mean, this is about, you know, payouts to players and assistant coaches and, you know, apparel, all this stuff. But now we've got Rick Pitino being fired by Louisville. And there really is a sense, isn't there, that this is the investigation that might be able to drill down deep into, you know, into what is going on in college sports in the United States.
Absolutely. I wholeheartedly agree. And the difference between this and everything before was, with the exception of the Norby Walters investigation in the 1960s, everything before was in the NCAA. It was these colleges investigating themselves. And that's not that scary. This is the federal government. There are people who are going to be going to jail for this conspiracy if everything proves to be true. So finally, yes, colleges like Louisville are acting.
What is it, what about this, you know, again, and we'll get into the details, but as we know, we're talking about shoe money and a kind of a, you know, triangulation with agents and financial advisors and players being directed or accepting money to go to certain programs because of associations with shoe companies. You know, the use of shoe money within the college business, you know, guys like Sonny Vaccaro kind of invented that, right? It's, so this has been around before. What about the current circumstances got the attention of the U.S. attorney?
Well, it's difficult to know whoever brings a matter to the U.S. attorney's attention or how it begins. But my understanding is this has been going on for 3 years over the course of two presidential administrations. The pure sums of money, the number of parties involved, the fact this involves kickbacks, this looks like standard racketeering. And all of this is made possible by an agreement amongst the NCAA members not to pay their college athletes. In some ways, this is reminiscent of what we saw with businesses in Russia in the late 1990s, when they were not allowed to operate under free markets. Underground, dirty, and corrupt markets emerge to lead to the same end.
So, yeah, like I said, there are people all over the United States who've covered sports, who played college sports, people connected with it who, you know, woke up this morning and probably weren't surprised to find out that this was happening. But I guess my other concern is, now this is an FBI investigation. Is there a chance that this branches out into other sports? Or because it's an FBI investigation, Mark, does it have to have, at least initially, a really narrow focus? Like, how would they proceed from here?
Every investigation is different. And even though I'm a practicing attorney, I never actually practiced inside the FBI. What I presume is you take the strongest evidence that you have at the point in time in which you believe you get an indictment, and you file the claim, or here are three claims. Now, what I think is very likely to happen with the NCAA, much as many other conspiracies, is that initially they have enough on a small party, and everybody internally will say, no, it's not going on. But between these four assistant coaches, the agent, the financial person, and the executives at Adidas, somebody is going to flip. The FBI will use things such as Queens for a Day, which means that they will get somebody who already has been charged and tell them that you will not be charged with anything else if you reveal everything else you know that we don't already know. There also is leniency, amnesty, immunity, and other things that for lesser actors could be offered. What may very well happen is that certain people are flipped, a lot more information will be revealed. At the same time, some of these schools that look very bad now may finally come out and say, it's not just us, it's them too. And my gut is, before this is done, there'll be a far broader web of many more schools ensnared within this.
Now, what I need you to explain, Mark, is, like, I understand why this would be a gross violation of NCAA rules. Explain to me why it's illegal. What, you know, and does any of that have to do with the fact that these are these all public institutions we're talking about?
Well, it's in the ones thus far. USC is public. I'm not sure if the entirety of this is public or private, but I don't think that underlies the real issue here. The issue here is that you have assistant coaches that have accepted bribes. The underlying issue involves here that there has been corruption, that people have taken money to engage in organized illegal behavior, and that's the real underlying substance.
So, but the illegal behavior, again, so I'm just trying to understand. I'm an assistant coach. I direct players to certain places in return for cash. You know, that's coming in, that like the cash comes from the shoe companies, the cash in this system. And again, there's kind of this triangulation between the coaches, the players, potential agents. You know, you're directing them to potential agents and directing them to financial advisors, right? So that's my understanding of how this works. You know,
that is correct.
Okay.
I mean, there are a whole wide range of theoretical claims that be brought here. For the four college coaches, they accepted bribes or kickbacks to the extent that shoe companies are signing with schools or athletes are signing with schools. The relationship is supposed to be between those parties. In essence, these coaches skimmed or took money inappropriately to induce particular behavior. That's a bribe, and that in itself is illegal. Now, whenever we talk about college sports, things become further complicated because we have this statute in the United States, SPARTA, the Sports Agent Responsibility and Trust Act, which is supposed to require the disclosure of certain activities that have not been disclosed. But even if you leave aside the special treatment of college sports under federal law, this is simple bribery and arguably bribery, fraud, arguably extortion, and perhaps even racketeering.
So this isn't going to be one of those things then when a college administers its own penalty and it goes away. Now that the FBI has got it, this is going to follow. It's going to be followed through to the end, one would think.
That's correct. From my perspective, this is the single biggest scandal that we have ever seen in the history of college sports. Not because anything worse happened here than happened before, but for the first time, this is not an internal trade association deciding to punish or not punish its own members. This is the U.S. government now that's getting involved, and I would be very surprised if this is limited to the very few number of schools. Once this opens, we are going to hear the floodgates of more. That's at least my very strong hunch.
So it's the greatest in terms of the scope. Like you would put it ahead of the point-shaving scandal, for instance.
Absolutely. I mean, the point-shaving scandal, in essence, brought down CCNY basketball.
Yeah,
and we know the result of the point-shaving scandal is that the City University of New York has never had big-time basketball again, but it's been limited here. We are not talking about one school. We are not talking about a few schools in a very close-in region. We are talking about many of the powerhouses of college basketball and indirectly football in this country.
Do you think this is going to have any impact at all, Mark, on the discussion about should college athletes be paid? In other words, this just seems to add fuel to the system. I know, or fuel to the argument. I know some of the bribes here were the money was going to the players, but this is probably just going to add fuel to the argument that look, everybody's making something off these kids. Why not give them, at least a living wage or pay them? Much as a kid who goes to school and has a part-time job would be paid.
I agree with you entirely, and I would go a step further and say that if the NCAA did not have its principle of amateurism that prevented college athletes from reaching contractual agreements in the free market with shoe companies, not to mention with their own institutions, this never could have happened. This entire conspiracy and underground dirty behavior and this whole American hustle only became possible by this industry, which is a multi-billion-dollar industry, with colleges that make huge sum of money from sports as well as shoe companies that do, at the same time being confined to rules that prevent them from sharing compensation in any which way to the underlying labor force that makes the entire industry work. And when things can't be done above board, markets move underground. We've seen this in the United States gambling in the 1960s, where organized crime took over an industry that we disallowed here. We saw that in Russia with private business in the late 90s. And we're now seeing with the NCAA that by having these rules in place that say we cannot pay college athletes when there's a financial interest to do so, it opens up the door for mass corruption, and it opens up the door for these black markets.
Yeah, it's pretty, look, it's pretty straightforward, isn't it? That there's enormous amounts of money that flow to the universities. You know, let's just talk about the shoe money, you know, and also ways for coaches to enrich themselves. So there's an enormous amount of money in the system that is based on the value created by the players, by and large. And it's almost a principle of capitalism that at some point that money is going to flow if they're to those players. If you know, if inducing them to do one thing or another, or go to one place or another, or getting them to wear one shoe or another, creates value. Right? It's just it's pretty much straight economics.
Absolutely. And it's a good old prisoner's dilemma. No NCAA school wants any of their competitors to be paying athletes. And if everybody followed the rule, the colleges would make the most and the athletes would make nothing. But any individual college is comparatively better off if it's able to seek money to its athletes to recruit top athletes to come, because they will make more money. So without a perfect detection mechanism, forget whether it's ethical or not, you are going to see colleges evading their own rules. And this isn't going to be one college or two or four. It's going to be many very competitive basketball institutions. We are going to learn that at least in some case or another had the incentive to not even follow their own rules, because the rules evade the whole idea of a free market.
Joined by Mark Edelman, law professor at the Zicklin School of Business, Baruch College, City University of New York. I want you to settle something, a discussion that Stephen and I had on Monday regarding Donald Trump and his suggestion or his demand order to NFL owners to fire players who were kneeling. Is there any legal ground that would allow an owner to fire a player for kneeling during the anthem? Because Mr. Brunt made a good point. Yes, there is the First Amendment right. But you are at a place of work, and I would imagine that if an employer wanted to say that somehow, you know, my company, my business has received some sort of economic hit as a result of this individual's actions, perhaps there's something there. So I'm just leaving aside the stupidity of Donald Trump and his tweet, could a legal case be made for somebody being fired from their job for kneeling during the national anthem?
That's a great question. First, I apologize as an American professor on behalf of our president to Canada.
Well, don't worry. We spent 8 years apologizing for the guy who was prime minister before this one.
We're the least of it, man. Yeah, if you're going to start, there's a lot of people need to be apologized to before us.
But to break it down as simply as it can in four or five steps, first, as a general matter, if you're a private employee, and you're an at-will employee, you're private and you're not subject to other contractual provisions, you are not entitled to free speech in the workplace. A private employer could fire a worker for any reason, including speech. That's the general rule. But there are exceptions to that. The first exception is it is not 100% clear if the NFL is a private employer. Our first gut is yes, they are. But there's a case involving the Yankees back in 1978 that's still lurking out there that says where activity takes place in an arena of public funding, that might swap something from being public to private. That's the first exception. The second exception to that is NFL workers are not at-will employees. They're parties to a collective bargaining agreement. And to the extent that speech would be deemed to be personal conduct, that is subject to an arbitration process. An odd one in that it goes back to the commissioner, but there would have to be an arbitration process involved internally within the league. You can't just fire someone. Third, and most interestingly to me, is that while a private employer could fire someone for speech, the government is not allowed to compel negative consequences to individuals based upon their speech. Free speech is really supposed to be freedom from government intrusion. And to the extent that it's not an NFL team saying we are firing this worker because we didn't like what they say, but this is the President of the United States, in essence, ordering an NFL team to do it, or encouraging it, in the sense of that the NFL relies on the federal government for a lot of private funding. Then it becomes even more complicated.
So could that turn into, in this hypothetical scenario, so if the president is very publicly suggesting that these guys should be fired, and then an NFL owner then fires a player and says, well, you know, we, whether or not they said we did this because the president wanted us to, even the implication, would that, I know when you sign a collective agreement, when you're under a collective agreement, that you can't sue outside the agreement. You are limited to kind of the grievance process in most cases. So, but could that turn into something outside of the NFL collective agreement, something more than a grievance if a player decided to challenge that?
Absolutely. And what makes this so interesting to me is, but for the president's statements, this would be an internal matter. If an NFL owner just fired a player for kneeling during the anthem, that would be an internal matter that would be handled through the internal CBA process. And then if it went into the courts, most likely it would go into courts based on challenging the arbitration ruling.
Right.
But the moment that Donald Trump opened up his mouth and opened up his Twitter and went beyond just saying, I wouldn't hire this guy or I would fire this guy, to blasting the NFL and the NFL teams for not doing so, it at least creates a kernel of an argument that the free speech is being preempted by the federal government with an NFL team as unintended contributor to the activity. And then we have something that becomes a lot more complex and could get very ugly in the court system.